Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
And I am kind of smoking today because I've been out in the sun too freaking long and I'm like roasted, burnt.
Let's say, you're looking a little cherry red, my friend.
Yeah, I'm rocking the bacon look today. So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we've got the Carrillo, the original Rebel, and this is the Rebellious cigar. So this is actually going to sport a Connecticut broadleaf wrapper, Ecuadorian binder, Nicaraguan filler, out of the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, it's like it is a dark Connecticut broadleaf. I mean, it's almost got an oiliness to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this cigar, you know, the reason it was called the Rebel was, you know, something to do with Alec Bradley. And, you know, E.P. Carrillo, you know, basically was trying to find something that, you know, would compete with the La Gloria Cubana, if I'm not mistaken on that. So I think that's the reason why this was called the Rebellious, or the Rebel series.
Give it a Rebel Yale.
Absolutely. And, you know, this cigar here, you know, it hits you right off the bat with a lot of spice. You know, it's complex, it's earthy. I'm definitely going to call this one full body. Thoughts?
I mean, it's so far, it's a good cigar. It's like the second one of these I've had, and it came highly recommended, and it did not disappoint. So, yeah, I'm enjoying this a nice, you know, full-bodied Maduro cigar on a lazy Sunday afternoon.
Yes, a lazy Sunday that hasn't exactly been lazy.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're dealing with some original Rebels, should probably call in the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code Cigar Nerds for 20% off your order. Kick the can. Comes in a cool little pouch. Yeah, a little tin pouch so you can put it in anything. Your beer, your water, your whiskey. Take it wherever you want to go. You know, if you're going to go tubing down the river, you can throw some Strike Force in your bag. You're good to go. Also, speaking of, you know, rebels and rebelling against your programming, this week we're going to talk about a little movie called RoboCop.
I mean, I feel like there were three movies, you know, to the original, but what there was
two
also,
and a half worth watching.
Well, I mean, we'll get into it a little bit later. My thoughts sort of differ. You know, I remember playing some of the old video games for RoboCop, and then I think for a while there was like RoboCop the Dark series, right? That was basically like a TV series, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I remember seeing it. I forgot what channel, but yeah, there was a few. We'll get back into it in the main segment. But yeah, there was a couple animated series, and there was a two or three live action series, and a couple like, you know, made for TV movies that, but yeah. And then of course a remake later on, but
yes.
Yeah. It's been 30 years since Officer Alex Murphy, walked the beats of Detroit. And we will get into that, in the main segment.
Yay for robot zombies.
Oh,
and with that,
we'll be right back.
Detroit, the near future. Officer Alex J. Murphy and his partner Ann Lewis fight to rid the decaying city of the criminal element which infests it. After being mortally wounded in the line of duty, Officer Murphy is outfitted by OCP with bulletproof titanium robotic parts and with computer-enhanced motor and sensory capabilities. He has become the ultimate super cop. RoboCop.
welcome back to the podcast. This week we're talking about a fallen officer and memorializing the 30th anniversary of the death of Officer Alex Murphy in Old Detroit.
I mean, is Old Detroit really all that different from current Detroit?
Yeah. Oh, yes, we're talking about 1987's RoboCop, made for $13 million, made $53 million, directed by Paul Verhoeven. But, yeah, I mean, these going back and watching these movies now, they're kind of, like, prolific. Like, you know, the whole purpose of, if anyone's never seen RoboCop, what are you doing with your life? But basically...
Spoiler alert! Does that still work after 30 years?
No, I just think you're shit out of luck. You're communist if you've not seen this movie by now. Oh, but yeah, it's like a near pre-apocalyptic Detroit, because it's like just the city is completely crime-ridden and is just completely falling apart. And
once again...
Yeah, like I said, it's... Yeah, like now... Yeah, the economy's gone to shit, and, you know, freaking Detroit's crime rate and falling apart. These movies are kind of, you know, prophesizing what happened with the actual Detroit.
So, do we start a company called OCP?
Yeah, that's like the only, that's how they're going to save, they got to start a RoboCop program to save, you know, actual Detroit, because, I mean, Bill Gates or somebody like that can come in and you know, finance the police force, just like, you know, there's a corporation called OCP who is kind of bought or, you know, are financing, backing, bought the police force to try to rid crime of Old Detroit, and they had this whole plan to basically knock things down and build some kind of mega city in where Detroit used to be. And the first step in this plan is their new law enforcement program. Well, starters, Ed 209, who is kind of shitty.
Yeah, to say the least. Like, dude, could you imagine, like, you're trying to pitch this product and, like, look, it activates on command. Here, point this gun at this robot. And yes. It's like you have 10 seconds to comply and you get shot up. Like, the cover-ups and everything. Like, I think that's one of the things I liked about RoboCop is, you know, there's always that whole underlying, you know, corporate greed, you know, factor. And, like, you know, I always think about, you know, any companies that are out there designing military tech and that type of stuff. Like, you know, how much spin and cover up and things are you not aware of that yeah. happen behind the scenes?
Plus, it was, you know, going to be like, you know, for urban pacification was it has this giant... gun arm. How is that thing going to do, like, actual any kind of, like, police work? I mean, like, and that's the whole thing. It's like, well, you know, if we, because you, like I said, thinking like, yeah, because this, like, was made in the 80s, and it's such an 80s movie where it's like, yeah, the underlying theme of, like, corporate greed and stuff like that. And they're like, well, you know, if it's successful here in Detroit, we've got all kind of military contracts lined up for these things and everything else. And then when they go to demo it, you know, it blows away one of the executives, like, just unloads on it. He's like nothing but like a puddle of goo by the time they, you know, unplug it. And that, you know, leads a young executive to suggest an alternative plan he'd been coming up with, the RoboCop program. Because they're like, we can't depend on kind of like foreshadowing eventual drone technology. We need an actual human brain in this machine making decisions. So let's take a fallen officer and put him in a robot.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, for me, I was always, like, was there ever a RoboCop versus Terminator? Because I feel like this was a meshing of a...
There was a game. I can't remember what system was on, but I remember playing it, and it was hard as shit. Because, like, if I remember correctly, you started off as RoboCop, and you end up, you know, fighting, like, some kind of, like, early version of Skynet or something, and gets, like... His program gets corrupted, and he ends up, like, gets shutting down, and then wakes up later in the, you know, future Terminator taking over era, and then you're running around fighting Terminators through the whole game.
And I want to. I think that was on Sega, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. I mean, and it could, you know, date back as far as the original NES. I don't think there's been any recent, you know, attempts at a RoboCop-esque game.
I mean, there's a pretty sweet Epic Rap Battles of History with RoboCop versus Terminator.
What's that got to do with video games?
I don't know.
It would be the soundtrack.
That'd be pretty sweet. I just like the line, you have a robot programmed boner for John Connor. That's probably one of the best lines of the song. It's like, you don't know sacrifice, you don't know honor, all you know is a pre-programmed boner for John Connor, or something like that.
But, I mean, you know, going back to, you know, RoboCop at its core, I mean, you know, he always had four objectives. And, of course, objective four was always classified, but in the name of corporate greed, you know, the whole, you know, he cannot kill any executive member of OCP. And,
yeah, because, you know, they're, you know, basically was like, you know, a slit. Yes, 1991's RoboCop versus Terminator, Sega, Super Nintendo. So yeah, I remember playing on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I played on Sega, you know, and that's where I was remembering that from. Because I could always remember, like, robots, like, and you were obviously cyborg.
Yeah.
Robot zombie. Let's just say it for what it is.
I mean, and reading some of these weird, like, freaking fan theories and you know, critical analysis of RoboCop, people compare it to, like, a Jesus allegory where he's this guy who, you know, dies and is resurrected and whatnot. And he's there to, you know, clean up the streets.
I'll stay away from the religious context there.
But
it's kind of cloudy out. I don't want lightning bolts to come to the ceiling.
To get back to the whole, like, corporate greed theme of this first movie, you know, not only do they say program it so he cannot attack his creators, there's also the whole thing before that, before when, you know, they're talking about that, like, now that OCP has taken over the police department, there's been a whole lot of transfers. And basically what they're doing is, like, we need a dead officer who has signed up for, you know, to become this RoboCop. So they started transferring people that they had, you know, without any kind of input from them, that they're like, oh, this guy would make a cool candidate for RoboCop. Let's transfer them to the most dangerous precinct in the city and just hope they get killed.
Yeah. Which, that precinct always seems like such a mess. Like, I've never been into a police precinct where literally people are getting decked in the face. There's mobs of people yelling and screaming. Like, it's like the apocalypse, like, on a good day.
It's standard Detroit. Oh. Yeah, just like the super clean OCP stuff, and then there's just the grimy, like, you know, like a freaking real, aka old Detroit. And, yeah, also, you know, playing Alex Murphy is Peter Weller, and, you know, who, this role had to be insane for him, and he did a good job of portraying being robotic, but also, you know, letting that, you know, humanity shine through. Yes. As his programming kind of, his humanity starts overriding his programming. But also, I mean, the suit, this is like a pre-CGI day. Nowadays, like, you see Iron Man, you know, freaking Robert Downey Jr. is wearing basically a mocap suit most of the time with, you know, like, you see the behind the scenes footage. He's basically has like a chest piece and his like arms and legs are all like, you know, freaking mocap sensors and, or, you know, the stuff they can replace it with CGI. Yes. But yeah, he was in this whole suit that they said, like the first version had no ventilation. They eventually had to, like, install kind of fans or like an air conditioner they could plug into it. But he was, like, losing 3 pounds a day wearing this thing just from, like, the heat. Because this was also filmed in Texas, so that Texas summer heat in a tin can.
But it's a dry heat.
You're surrounded by rubber and metal, and it's like, yeah, it,
yeah, yeah. Could, at that point, you're, like, cooking inside this thing. Like,
yes.
Like, welcome to the pressure cooker.
Here, we want you to act this movie, do a good job of acting, but we want you to sit in a microwave the whole time.
But, you know, to your point, though, I mean, you know, the actual RoboCop and the, you know, the physical, you know, and, you know, the robotic movements, like, he sold that role. Even going back and watching it, like, the only times that I felt like, you know, you could really tell that stuff was dated is when they tried to, you know, do a lot of special effects stuff.
Yeah, when he, like, gets into, like, a physical fight with Ed 2, that the CGI on Ed 209 does not, not hold up that well. You know, it's all right when it's alone by itself, because that's probably a practical effect when it's just standing there. But when it's him and RoboCop kind of fighting each other and he's, like, throwing RoboCop around, it is such bad CGI.
Yes. Yeah, and that was really the only time. And I mean, you know, as far as all the other acting and everything, I mean, it was on point, and I still think that it, you know, very much holds up to, you know, today's standards. And yeah, going back and watching it, you know, I was just in tune after seeing it the 100th time as I was the first time.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, when I was a kid, I loved this movie. I mean, I probably wore out a couple VHSs, or back in the day when, like, you know, VHSs were stupid expensive and you actually went to a Turtles, or, you know, before Blockbuster. And I would, like, every time we'd go rent a movie, I'm like, let's get RoboCop. Like, you've seen it a million times, doesn't matter, gotta see it again.
Yeah. Well, you know, the humanity aspect of it, you know, always, you know, was really cool. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, Murphy's kid looks up to this, you know, TV cop that, you know, does the whole, you know, twirling of the pistol and, you know, puts it away and, you know, looks up and, Dad, can you do that? And, you know, the fact that, you know, the robot is then, you know, mimicking, you know, hey, yeah, this is the role model and this is what I want to,
yeah,
you
know. Yeah, because when he first gets there and meets his partner, Ann Lewis, played by Nancy Allen, they're getting coffee and he's like, freaking spinning his gun. Smart enough to take his magazine. You know, he actually, you know, after he's done spinning the gun, shows him putting his magazine back in, so he's not a dumbass. And he's just like, being all fancy. I'm just like, yeah, my kid liked this guy on TV. And of course, I had to do it just to look up for him. She's like, yeah, just for him, huh? All right, I kind of watched TV too. I thought it was
kind of, but I kind of like the way that they were introduced, you know, because Ann Murphy's, you know, bringing in this, you know, freaking prisoner or whatever. They're just giving her all kinds of crap, and she just legit turns around, decks dude in the face. You know? Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure that, you know, there's probably,
yeah, she's
some
definitely
sort of.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely like some kind of
civil right violation. This
was the 80s. There was no such thing as civil rights violations back then. There was no cell phone cameras to film every traffic stop. You could get away with elbowing a suspect in the face. But yeah, she's, you know, not your typical movie lady cop who's just kind of like, you know, damsel in distress. But I mean, she's a legit badass herself. I mean,
yes.
She like decks that dude out, and then later on when they get the call about this, you know, going after this gang, played by, you know, the leader of the gang, Clarence Boddicker, played by Kurtwood Smith, which is fucking brilliant, because I used to love that 70s show, and it's every time you see Red Foreman and then you just think,
yes,
like Clarence Boddicker. Going back and watching RoboCop again after watching that 70s show, it's just like, yeah, you just wait for him to call somebody dumbass. It's,
yes,
just, it's such a different role. But yeah, they get there and they're like, yeah, backup's not available. Y'all dealing with a bunch of guys with like machine guns and whatnot that just robbed a bank. But no backup for you because this is Detroit and, you know, everything's falling apart.
And
But she's like, you know, he's like, your call, partner. And she's like, let's do this. I mean, she.
But, you know, that to me was always, you know, kind of the. All right, you know, it's Hollywood magic at that point, because I don't think in any real life scenario.
Oh, no. They would, everybody would be showing up to that call just because you're like, wish a motherfucker would. We're going to get to shoot somebody today.
A lot of somebodies.
Yeah, but like I said, they kind of made her a badass, because like I said, he gives her the option when they get there. He's like, should we do it? And he's like, your call. And she's like, fucking hell yeah, this man almost going to take these dudes down.
But yeah, that whole, you know, him leading up to, you know, his demise where, you know,
oh, yeah, that was most
the freaking shotgun blast. Yeah, like.
When they just,
I'm
blow
take
his
a
hand
leg,
off,
a hand, an arm, like.
Yeah, that first shot when they just blow his hand off, and he gets up, starts trying to walk away, and he's like, "Oh yeah." I mean, that's like, as a kid, that was like, I probably shouldn't be watching this at, you know, 8 or however old I was, because yeah, that shit was brutal.
Yeah, like I forgot, like, you know, I always, you know, I from, you know, before I went back and, you know, rewatched everything, but. You know, I was like, you know, RoboCop wasn't really all that overly violent. And then going back and watching as an adult, like, yeah, probably, you know.
And this being the 80s, they went heavy duty on the squibs, man.
Yes. I
mean, freaking every gunshot is just like a blowing a huge hole in someone's chest, a big exit wound out the back. I mean, there's it is so bloody. And the, I like, you know, and then there's like the whole, you know, after he, you know, the building of RoboCop where it's all done from the perspective of him, where it's like
yes.
all these people working on him, and you know, because you know, that probably took, you know, a year maybe to build him, so it just keeps kind of jumping back along the process with them talking about what they're going to do to him and whatnot,
and it'd be like, oh shit, he's awake, quick, sedate him.
Yeah, I mean, I like that effect because you really never got to see him in the construction phase. You really didn't. I think like at one point you can kind of see a little bit in the monitor, and then you get like when he walks into the police station for the first time, you're just getting kind of a glimpse of him until he like walks into what's going to be his base camp. And, you know, that suit had to be made out of, you know, rubber and like, you know, freaking, you know, lightweight stuff. But just the weight they provided to this, I mean, the sound effects on the thing where he, every time he steps, it's like dunk, dunk, and the way, just the way he moves and stuff just makes it, you know, believable this is a big, heavy-ass machine.
Yeah, and, you know, that was kind of the weird thing to me, too, was knowing his power and his strength and everything else, yet they had him behind this freaking chain-link fence. Like,
I think it was more to keep, like, other people away from him, because the chain-link fence was not going to stop him if he decided to get up and walk away.
It didn't. You know, I mean,
I don't know how many times they've shown him break him into stuff, and he just reaches and grabs like a padlock and just crushes it and yanks it off the.
That or, you know, I mean, I don't remember which movie it may have been the first one, but, you know, I mean, dude's like barricaded behind a steel door, and, you know,
he just. Oh, no, it's in the second one where he goes to raid a drug lab, and he like knocks on the door, and the guy like opens the little peephole and looks, and his fist just goes through the steel door and punches the guy in the chest.
Like, you know, so that to me, but, you know, the supporting actors and actresses, you know, did such a phenomenal job.
Miguel Pfeiffer as Bob Morton, the guy who created RoboCop, and Ronnie Cox as Dick Jones, who is the corrupt, as you later find out, the corrupt head of OCP's defensive, you know, law enforcement division. And basically, he's the one controlling Clarence Boddicker and his gang, because his plan is to control crime so he could sell his police packages, his Ed 209s. Because even at one point when like him and Bob Morton get into it, and he's like your machine's a piece of shit, and he's like, it doesn't matter if it works or not, I've got contracts for repair and spare parts and all these things sold, this is going to be, you know, I don't care if it works, it's going to make money. Which, like I said, back to that just kind of corporate greed thing. And even with all the that's another thing that was kind of cool in this movie. Between main segments, there's these little, you know, news reports about what's going on, but then there's these fake commercials that pop up between these little news report segments, and they're all like these over-the-top products and stuff, like, you know, the 6000 SUX gets like 5 miles a gallon. And like the it was like thermonuclear war or something like
that. And nowadays we call those Bugattis.
Yeah. But it was basically like a
12 miles per gallon.
A global diplomacy. I forgot what the game was, but it was kind of like a battleship that devolves into like nuclear war at some point. And like, this is like all the weird fake products that were just awesome.
But you know what? I love that stuff. And you know, I the Grindhouse series. You know, that was one that, you know, they put in fake trailers that actually spun off, you know, legit movies and you know, stuff. So, you know, I always liked that whole, you know, little quirky, you know, added stuff. And, you know, I mean, and as far as like the news segments and everything, I mean, you could just see the politicized spin on things.
And what was great was the actors playing the news anchors were actual news anchors. Like, what's her name from Entertainment Tonight was like the lady reporter that's in all the news segments. In the first and the second movie, she shows up. And I can't remember her name now, but she was like one of the hosts of Entertainment Tonight. But I was like, watching it again, I'm like, oh shit, those are like real news anchors that have doing these little fake news sequences.
But, Yeah, I like, and you know, kind of a, I like too, the selection phase of, you know, the personality traits that would, you know, make a potential RoboCop. And, you know, some of the, you know, all right, do we go after somebody that's legit good? Do we go after somebody that's, you know, a bit sociopath? Like, you know, what direction do we go, you know? And that was one thing, like...
Yeah, and like the, especially in the, like the... Go deeper to it in the second one. We'll get to it in a second, but yeah. And then when he finds out, you know, like I back up for a second before he like you know starts becoming Murphy again and trying to hunt down his killers, and it leads to this whole conspiracy with OCP and Dick Jones, and they kind of frame him and send the cops and the Ed 209s after him and shit. But the first couple segments where he's just being RoboCop before he starts getting into like. I'm Murphy. I should like you know find the people who killed me. What it's like those like segments of him to spend a day on the streets in Detroit, like where he freaking shoots that rapist in the dick.
Yes,
like was those two guys were like, and he's like, targeting, ding, and just shoots him right in the nuts.
Yeah,
and like, then there's like the hostage
ma'am, do
situation.
You require, you know, or you know, he's like. I don't think he'll be a problem anymore. I'm going to, you know, send in a, you know, special rape, you know.
Yeah, well, we're going to get you counseling. Yeah, because he's so robotic in those first, like, couple segments. And then he gets that hostage situation where there's a guy, like, taking over City Hall, and he's like, keep him talking, and just goes in there and just walks through the wall and drags him out.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I like that, where it was...
Dead or alive, punk, you're coming with me.
Yeah, and it's like... Is he allowed to negotiate that way? Well, he just did.
Yeah. But then when he finally runs into what's his name, one of Boniker's crew, that's the weird motorcycle guy who's like robbing a gas station and stealing gas, and then like making fun of the clerk for being a college boy and stuff. And then when he sees him, he's like, wait a minute, because he saw him do like the because that's the one where he's like seeing him like dead or alive, punk, you're coming with me, and he's like. Wait a minute, that's the same thing that guy said that we murdered. He's like, you're dead, we killed you. And then that's when he starts triggering the memories of his former life, and he decides to go after Clarence. Yeah, that sequence when he finally tries to arrest him and goes into the coke lab, because it's the 80s, and that's what you got to bust is a coke lab, and just shoots the fuck out of everybody, and just starts like, he's like, you know, you have the right to remain silent. Let me throw you through a wall. And it's like reading him like his rights as he's like, you know, just beating the shit out of him. And then finally he's like, you know, obey the law. Directive starts popping up. And he's like, all right, I guess I got to arrest you.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's one of the things I think that made, you know, RoboCop. So, you know, it wasn't too over the top because, you know, the whole cyborg, you know, human robot and, you know, the fact that, you know, the human side, but then the programming would kick in, but yeah. Then you would see the bugs in the programming. And
yeah, because, I mean, eventually his, you know, humanity breaks through and his free will kind of breaks in. But, you know, giving him just those four directives of, you know, yeah, uphold the public trust, obey the law, and, shit, what was the third one?
I don't remember what it was off the top of my head.
But yeah, like, I mean, those were like the most simplest, you know, things. Like, you know, do whatever you want as long as you, you know, serve the public trust, protect the innocent, and uphold the law, as well as the don't fuck with OCP.
Well, yeah, but that was always classified. Like, yeah. You never actually knew
until he goes to arrest Dick Jones. He's like, oh, are you having troubles there, officer? Well, that's a little something I added to your programming, so you can't fuck with me. Yeah. Yeah, and then the sequence where he you know, gets all shot up, Lewis has to rescue him, and then they decide to you know, go after, you know, Clarence and all them. Because, you know, Dick is like, you know, he survived, you got to kill him, and outfits them with these, you know, freaking, basically Barrett 50 cals or some kind of fancy laser gun. And they come to hunt down RoboCop at the metal factory. The sequence where that dude runs the van into the freaking vat of toxic waste and just comes out and his skin's all like,
oh yeah, and he's,
oh god, that was so disgusting when I was a kid. And then he gets hit by the car and just freaking liquefies.
Yes. Yeah, that was one of those iconic, like, I you know, that was probably one of the best well done scenes. Like,
and then when he finally gets into a fight with Boniker and just he's drops like a load of steel on him and is like just trying to beat him and stab him. Kind of reminds me of that sequence from Terminator 2 where the Arnold gets that metal rod stuck through him, but his little computer jack, because you know this was pre Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, so he has to have like an actual R2-D2 type plug to stick into the computer, but it's a metal spike and that thing just comes out and stabs in the neck. Yes. And that looks like they dropped an entire bucket of blood on his chest from hitting that artery.
But you know, speaking of that, I mean, I thought that was, you know, pretty cool, you know, like that's, you know, once, you know, the humanity starts to set in and he goes to the crime database and, you know, you know, actually
starts doing legit police work. Yes, and stuff.
But
yeah, then like after that, when he goes to finally try to arrest Dick and walks into the boardroom and you know the old man who runs OCP, I don't even think they ever call him by his name. It's all call him the old man. He's like, "Can I help you, officer?" And he's like, "I'm here to arrest Dick Jones." He's like, plugs in and like plays the video of like, you know, him like confessing like, "Oh yeah, I run the crime." You know, like his confession that which is weird because he gives Boniker shit for confessing to RoboCop. He's like, he's a machine. He recorded everything you said, but then he does the exact same thing. It's like the classic James Bond, let me explain my plot to you before I kill you, but you're going to escape first. And then, you know, he grabs the old man and holds him hostage. And, you know, he's just like, I cannot harm an employee of OCP. And he's then like, he's like, Dick, you're fired. Thank you. Just draws his gun, just blows him out the window.
Yes.
And that whole, like, as he turns to walk away, what's your name, son? Murphy.
Yeah, I, you know, that to me, you know, was quite iconic. I love that, you know, freaking entire segment, the way that played out there.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was cool. And that leads us to 1990's RoboCop 2, directed by Irvin Kershner. And this one was actually written by Frank Miller, a.k.a. The Dark Knight.
Yes. Ah, Frank Miller.
I mean, this one does kind of have a comic booky feel to it once you, like, really think about it with, like, the, you know, the, you know, where crime's not enough for RoboCop. They've got to add a, you know, a robotic nemesis, someone that's is actually a threat to RoboCop. But yeah, this one was, Irvin Kershner. But yeah, of course, Peter Weller's back, Nancy Allen's back, and Tom Noonan, who plays the bad guy Kane in this one.
Yeah, and I once again, you know, this one was, you know, I mean, you know, as of, you know, even, you know, within the last 10 years, I mean, you had a lot of, you know, police departments, first responders, those types of people, you know, that weren't getting, you know, paid what they were due. So, you know, pensions and strikes and stuff like that were very much a buzz. And
yeah, and kind of to mirror what happened to actual Detroit, but of the whole bankruptcy. Because, you know, OCP in the first one there is that whole corporate greed element in the first one. But this one really hammers it home, because in the first one it was almost like there was a rogue element within OCP, that OCP itself might be good and wanting to like build this mega city for the benefit of Detroit. But in this one you see, no, it's like, you know, Dick was a criminal, but the rest of them are also just greedy fucks. So they're like, oh, we're just going to force Detroit to default on its loans. And since we control the cops, we're going to cut their pay and their pensions, so force all of them to go on strike and crime just to shoot through the roof. So the city's going to end up defaulting on its loan, and we can just step in and take over the city and do what we want and go ahead and build our mega city, whether people want it or not.
Yeah, and, you know, this one here, I mean, you had so much of the cast, you know, that returned for this one that, I mean, it was a good segue. I mean,
even because, you know, in the first one, Dick has Boniker kill Bob Morton, so he can try to like end the RoboCop program. But the guy who was Bob Morton's right hand man, he's in this one, kind of, you know, he's kind of taking over that position as the head guy in the RoboCop program. So it was kind of cool seeing him, you know, step up and be, you know, the Bob Morton of this movie. And the whole RoboCop, I like the whole RoboCop 2 program. They had that sequence of like, you know, they're having problems with it because everyone that they tried to turn into a RoboCop kept committing suicide.
Yeah.
And they had like a psychologist like, basically like, these guys can't handle, you know, what has happened to them, you know, being resurrected and finding out they're a robot. Like, the only reason why it happened to Murphy's work, because this is, he had like a strong sense of duty and a strong, I think it was like a Catholic upbringing where suicide to him was not an option. You know, they're like, his psychological makeup is the only thing that made him, you know, able to withstand this. And their suggestion was, well, let's find someone that might actually want this, someone who's like, wants the power and whatnot. So she starts, you know, recommending criminals and psychopaths that,
yes,
that they think that they can, you know, control, which that's always a mistake.
Yep. And you know, it kind of to fit the theme of the first one. So it's no longer, you know, crack or cocaine. It is now Nuke. And yeah. I always, you know, going back and playing the Fallout games with Nuka-Cola and everything else, like, I almost wonder if it was like a throwback to...
Well, this was in the 90s, so cocaine was the thing of the 80s. It's the 90s now. We're going to deal with, like, you know, meth or whatnot. So it's only cool to do cocaine in the 90s. You got to start doing crack, and, you know, Nuke was the crack of future Detroit.
But, yeah... And here we get to, you know, our main villain, Cain. How fitting for a villain.
Yeah, like, you know, the old Cain and Abel.
Yep. It goes along with that whole Catholic upbringing thing. So, I mean, yeah. It works.
Oh, yeah, but the, was it Fox, I think, is the girl's name who takes over the RoboCop, was it Don Johnson? That's funny, the other... executive's name's Don Johnson. Speaking of 80s heroes. And then the kid too, who is like one of Kane's little right-hand soldiers, who's
you know, to equate that in modern times, he kind of, you know, I get the whole, you know, Joffrey from Game of Thrones, like, you want to hate him, and you know, the little kid, I'm like, you should be in Home Alone or something, like,
yeah. Yeah, Hob. You see, and the kid's carrying a freaking Desert Eagle fitty. Yeah. Like, that's a gun's too big for you, kid. If this wasn't a movie, that would probably put you on your ass. But, you know, yeah, he sees him, and he just reminds him of his son, and he can't, like, pull the trigger on him, and the kid shoots him in the face and runs away. But then they have that, you know, kind of cool, you know, shootout sequence where he, like, ricochets the gun off the freezer door to hit the guy in the head.
When he's using the baby, you know, as a trajectory shield. And everything else, like... You know, that to me was, you know, pretty awesome. I enjoyed the shit out of that.
But yeah, and this one too, like, cool thing, because he's like, now that he's pretty much fully Murphy, he's kind of like stalking his wife and stuff because he still has the memories. And they
explain, I mean, not really. I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, you know, from the film's perspective.
He's just kind of watching out for her.
But, you know, I mean, at the same time, like. You know, what do you do in that position? You know, if somebody thinks you're dead and you moved on, but really, like, I mean, but you still have, you know, I don't know how much of an emotional, you know, response, I mean, it's gotta be, but I mean,
be hard. But then there's, and they have that whole sequence where she's like, you know, suing the department and thinks he's, and they're like, hey, you know, the guy's kind of a dick, you know, well, her lawyer tells him about all the stuff that she went through after his death. But the other guy's like, you're just a freaking machine, man. And she's suing us. He's like, you know, what is your plan if you admit to her she's alive? Can you actually have sex with her and cuddle with her? Because you're a freaking machine. We didn't program a dick for you, you know, basically. And he's finally like, fine, just, I'm a machine. And she shows up and he's like, your husband's dead. They just put this face on me to honor your husband and whatnot, and you know, I mean, that had to be like hard as shit for him.
Oh yeah,
like,
well, no, I mean, you see, I mean, it was for her good, to, you but... know, his programming and his psyche and everything else. And I mean, you know, the lady that plays, you know, his actual like programmer slash doctor and stuff, like,
she's a little bit weird too, because like, especially when he gets like hurt, because you know, he goes after Cain because he's got a thing about the nuke and whatnot, and. Yeah, they trap him and cut him to pieces and dump him on the doorstep of the PD. And she's all like, you know, arguing with the OCP guy. She's like, no, if you, and they're, you know, going to take him off to rebuild him. And she's like, if you need anything, like, I know every inch of his programming. I'm like, she's been molesting him at some point, you know, because she's a little bit like, she was almost in love with him from just the, she was just a little too, you know, overly concerned with his safety.
But just I mean, you know, at the same time though, like, she sold that role so well. Like, I mean, you know, you know, yeah, I mean,
because she could have been a typical OCP drone, but she was like, no, she actually cared for, you know, Murphy's well-being and whatnot, and did not like what they were doing to him. And like, well, this one still has that, you know, theme of corporate greed. It also has kind of the theme of, you know, political correctness, which was huge in the 90s when they have that whole like focus group to like, how can we improve RoboCop? He's only got these four directives. We need to add more. And they end up putting like 300, 400. Yes. Yeah, something like, and it's like, he can't even do his job when he comes back. Cause he's like, you know, you should talk it out first and stuff. And he's like, this, his programming is just so like jacked up, where he goes in and there's like, you know, a guy's like shooting at him, and he's like trying to talk to him until freaking Lewis finally shoots him in the face. And then the guy still starts trying to lecture him and read Miranda to the dead guy. Yeah. And then goes in there and starts lecturing the kids that have been robbing this place. And it's all his, like, you know, freaking metaphors are just mixed. It's like,
yes,
you know, it's like a,
don't do drugs.
Yeah, time saved is worth school. Two in the bush. You know, and it's like, what? And he's like, I'm, and they're like, dude, he is fucked up. Yeah. And then he gets graffitied and shit.
But, you know, I mean, this does, you know, I mean, this allows, you know, Murphy, you know, so they realize how screwed up his programming is, geez, if I can even talk, you know, and then they do the whole freaking, well, maybe it just needs a power surge and we can, you know, reboot the system.
And that's probably one of my favorite sequences is because they bring him back once they figure out how fucked up he is, and they start going through and seeing all these directives that they've added, and like, what can you do? I'm like, we can't, you know, we can't do it. We could reboot his system, but that would cut off his life support and probably kill him. A massive electrical surge might, you know, do it, but it could also kill him. And he just like takes it on himself, stands up, and he's like, "Where are you going?" He just walks out to the front where all the officers are out there protesting, and just grabs a hold of a transformer and fries himself. And like, and that was what cool to all these guys that are like protesting or whatnot. As soon as they see, you know, because they, to them, he's not a machine. He's one of their fellow officers. And as soon as they see him get hurt, you know, they all drop what they're doing and come, like, trying to take care of him, and they're carrying him inside, and he just wakes up, and he's like, you know, freaking objectives. It's like, no objectives found. I'm like, all right, now he's, like, fully human, and he's like, put me down. He just has that pissed off voice, and he sends up, like, what's bugging you, buddy? And they're like, Kane's bugging me. And then, like, all of them jump in the cars, and they're going to, like, find Kane, and they run by that hot dog stand. The two guys goes, damn, there goes all the cops. And they're not carrying picket signs. They're about to whoop somebody's ass.
But I mean, that whole turning point there, I thought, was just absolutely awesome.
Yeah, and of course they go find Kane and fuck him up, and he apparently turns out to be the prime candidate for the RoboCop 2 program, because they think they can control him by just, you know, feeding him drugs. He'll do what he wants for his fix. And they're like, and this time they build like a freaking, yeah. They're like, yeah, let's not go like, you know, human with this one. Let's just put a brain in a box and build a freaking tank.
Yeah. Oh.
But yeah. And that too, instead of having a face, he's got this like, you know, kind of like knight's helmet thing that opens up, and a, you know, freaking little monitor comes out, and there's like a CGI face on it, which is like horrible. What is it? It's a freaking, I forgot what movie it was, where it's like all like really bad VR 3D. I mean, his freaking computer face looks a lot like some other like old 80s, you know, early CGI movies.
Yeah. Well, and you know, who was it that played the mayor?
Oh, I have no idea. Yeah, that was the mayor was cool too, because they Willard Pugh as Mayor Cusack. Yeah, because he has that whole thing where he's just like cussing out the old man, where they're like, oh yeah, you got to pay us $35 million, and we're taking your city. And he's just like, fuck you. So, you know, after Kane dies, he's
like, did we sign that? Like, yeah, we signed that.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, the whole plan of Hob, who is, you know, they all think Kane's dead, and he's taken over his drug trade and has all the money, and, you know, they think if OCP's allowed to take over and corporatize the city, you know, drug trade's going to be, it's going to be bad for business. So they offer to bail out the city. Like, hey, we'll give you $50 million to cover your debt. Just hands off with the nuke. Like I said, he's like, we're, and he gives him a whole speech. He's like, we're not forcing this on them. We don't advertise. We offer a product. We don't give it, we don't force this down people's throat. People come to us that want it. You know, we don't give it to anybody who doesn't want it. Just leave us alone. We're businessmen like everybody else. We're making a cheaper product. And if you're not fucking with us, hell, we can even make it safer. You know, and it just gives them like a whole like salesman speech of like,
it's like, I've got a legit business plan.
Yeah. And the mayor's like, yeah, not a bad idea.
But I also, you know, this one here, you know, I thought was good too, where, you know, there's, you know, some, you know, obviously some police corruption and, you know, the whole, you know, officer that snitches, that's, you know, trying to.
Yeah, he's basically addicted himself and he's, you know, giving Kane information and then ends up giving RoboCop information when he, like, slams his face into the arcade machine.
Yes.
Oh, but that signals him when they bail him out of jail and bring him back and are going to, like, just basically do a autopsy on him while he's alive. And Kane makes the kid watch it, too. And it's like, he's all trying to be tough. He's like, and the doctor's like, shouldn't we, like, send the kid out? And he's like, why? And, like, and then he starts cutting him open. And the kid's like, yeah, man, I can watch this. And then all of a sudden, he's like, oh, God, starts about to puke. Yeah. And, like, freaking Kane just grabs him and makes him watch it. I mean, that's, like, some serious shit, yeah, right there.
That's definitely, you know,
it's like, yeah, everybody wants to be gangster until it's time to do gangster shit. And he's like, you know, this is going to be your life, kid. You're going to have to do this shit. You know, you should watch and learn. And from that point on, that kid's a little psychopath himself, nearly.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he was never, you know, normal.
No.
Up until, you know, you don't really... I didn't feel any remorse for the kid up until, you know, kind of his final scene as, you know, he's dying and, you know, RoboCop's there and it's like, you know, I'll go get help or something. And it's like, no, don't leave. I'm cold. And he's like, yep, you're going into shock. And, you know, and at that point, he's like, he knows the kid's, you know, on his
breath. Yeah, and the kid's like, you know, dying sucks. He's like, but I suppose you know something about that, don't you? And, like, I mean, they had that kind of like moment together. And, like, that was, you know, kind of a really cool scene. Because, of course, you know, OCP, you know, Tad's do some, he's like, nobody can know about this, but let's go kill all these fuckers and, like, send RoboCop 2 in to, like, you know, kill everybody and try to kill the mayor, but he escapes. And then they have that, you know, freaking press conference where they introduce, you know, after OCP has taken over the city, introduce their plans for the new city and also the new RoboCop. Who, as soon as they show him some drugs, loses his shit, and they're like, uh-oh, we created a Frankenstein, and now Frankenstein's pissed off.
How do we destroy Frankenstein?
And this is badass. Friggin' Murphy walks in. He's like, Kane, why don't we step outside?
Yeah.
I mean, these movies it was almost like, you know, a cyberpunk Western. I mean, he's very, like, much like the cowboy, archetype, especially with his little, you know, gunslinging, pistol twirling abilities, and just some of the stuff he says is very, like, you know, that dead or alive, you're coming with me, and so he's like very. That would be fitting in an old cowboy movie.
I mean, you would see that, you know. I mean, I could definitely, you know, some John Wayne shit.
Exactly.
But I mean, Kane's death I thought was awesome. Where, you know, RoboCop, you know, basically just rips his brain out.
Yes. Friggin' lures him with the drugs, and as soon as he's getting high, he, like, jumps on his back, and, like, and that whole fight sequence to him, I mean, it was more intricate than his fights with Ed 209, but, I mean, the CGI is just wonky nowadays. But, yeah, when he finally pulls his brain, and that's the thing, the image, too, of when they first show Kane without the suit, and it's, like, a spinal column, a brain, and two eyes. And then when he pulls him out, it reminded very much of Mother Brain from Metroid.
Yes.
When he, like, yanks him out and then just, like, squishes him on the street, and he finally, like, you know, the robot dies and falls over. It looked badass. And then at the end, like, when they're, like, you know, OCP, of course, you know, like, back to the corporate breed, is like, dude, we're probably all going to go to jail for this. Like, well, what if it was just one person's idea, a rogue element in the company that we could all pin this on? Yeah, that would probably work. You should go handle that. They're going to throw the freaking doctor under the bus. And then at the end, you see Murphy's pulling out his wrench. He's going to take the helmet off again. And he's back to being, Murphy. And Lewis is all pissed. Like, God damn, they're going to get away with it again. And he's like, yeah, don't worry. We'll get him eventually. You know, we're only human.
Yes. Yeah, very fitting end. And that then takes us to RoboCop 3, which nobody returns for.
Yeah, RoboCop is now played by Robert Burke. Even that weird scientist chick that was in love with RoboCop is played by Jill Hennessy in this movie. Anne Lewis and the sergeant are the only two people that return, and she gets killed off halfway through the movie.
And shout out to Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, this one was actually filmed in Atlanta. They like, hey, we got these rundown neighborhoods that we're going to tear down for the new Olympic Stadium and whatnot. We should film a movie here. This looks ruined enough to be Detroit. Yeah, this one was like, it could have been a like straight to video or made for TV movie. It just did not hold up to those first two movies. I mean, it was still written by Frank Miller, but yeah, it.
I mean, this one to me, like, you know, the premise felt very like, you know, I was going back to, you know, thinking World War II and, you know, Germans in the concentration camps with the whole relocation and that type of thing.
Yeah, because OCP at this point has, you know, they're about to go bankrupt with the failure of the RoboCop 2 program, and they still haven't been able to make their Delta City. So their new plan is like, oh, crime is just getting out of control. We're going to put in this special crime unit called the Rehabs, who very was like, you know, militant dressed, almost Nazi-esque, and while they were claiming to be going in and cleaning up the town, really they were trying to force relocate people out of the area of the city that the OCP wanted to tear down and build their new city on, to the point where RoboCop is like, I've got to side with the rebels. I can no longer side with the government. I have to join the resistance that's fighting against OCP. And some of those sequences with him going after, where he gets like, because it was cool, because like, which made no sense at all from a storytelling standpoint, is when he tries to go up against the Rehabs, he can't fight them because of, you know, Directive 4. But in RoboCop 2, they deleted all, he deleted all his objectives. At some point, you know, oh yeah, we reloaded his program later on. You know, they never covered that. He's like, oh, you now have Objective 4 back. Why? You deleted it in the last movie. Why is it still here?
Yeah, I mean, there were some definite inconsistencies. I mean, I will say that, to your point, if this was a standalone or, you know, straight to DVD or VHS at this time, or something of that nature, I mean, it wasn't a bad movie, you know, going back and watching it, but
yeah, it bombed.
It didn't
though.
have the same feel to it.
And there was a lot more comedic elements in this one too. I mean, like I said, it was a little bit cheesier. 1993, made for $22 million, only made $10 million. Bombed hard. But yeah, when RoboCop fails to take down the Rehab the first time because of Objective 4, he gets, you know, fucked up pretty bad, and the rebels try to rebuild him, and his scientist lady fixes him and manages to delete the stuff that someone had reinstalled, apparently, to remove Objective 4 so he could finally fight back against Rehab. And the one weird but cool thing, like, oh, we raided a OCP weapons warehouse, and we got this weird-ass machine gun we don't know how to use. It turned out to be, like, spare parts for a RoboCop. So he had, like, where he could replace his hand and now have, like, this big-ass machine gun arm. And then also a jetpack.
Here, the jetpack, yeah. And the jetpack sequences were horrible.
Oh, yeah, he's, like, flying through there, launching missiles and strafing guys because they get in a big, like, fight scene where they come in to finally take out the resistance, and the cops, you know, they're like, no, we're going to side with the people of Detroit and fight against you.
But, you know, that to me I thought was a cool premise where, you know, RoboCop is actually helping out, you know, these group of rebels and, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, that's the first, you know, real protect and serve aspect, yeah. You know, as he's scanning and, you know, he's seeing people forcibly, you know, being removed against their will and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, and him and Lewis try to, like, you know, they're like, oh, wait a minute, we're no longer the good guys. We need to protect these supposed criminals because, no, they're being abused by the system. And yeah, that was kind of a cool flip and kind of reminds me back to RoboCop 2 when he first, you know, before they go after Kane and all the cops are protesting, he goes out there and he's like, hey, are we police? You know, and they're like, yeah, we're kind of being, you know, like we should, you know, do something. And, you know, he talks them all out of the picket line because, you know, he wasn't allowed to strike because he's, you know, his programming wouldn't allow him to. But yeah, in this one, he gets, you know, a lot more human. And then there's that weird, like, chase sequence at one point where he steals a freaking pimped out Cadillac.
Yes.
And that thing gets, like, by the end of it, he's pretty much driving a frame with an engine because there's so many parts
well,
of that
I
car
was wondering,
that's kind of blown,
you know,
off.
You know, it was crazy to me because at you know, some point it's getting peppered with a shotgun. And, you know, the shotgun's pretty effective. And then it gets started peppering with grenades. And, you know, I'm like, I'm pretty sure the shotgun explosions would have dismantled, you know, or taken out the vehicle. But no, like you said, he's there in just a burning chassis and,
yeah,
you know. It's just like...
So, like I said, they have this ridiculous comedic elements. And then there's the... OCP is now getting bought out by a Japanese corporation because they're going bankrupt. And the Japanese corporation brings in three robo-ninjas. Because, you know, their RoboCops are, you know, much more advanced because they're Japan.
But ninjas are awesome.
The
people
robot
love ninjas.
And then they get hacked and they, like, fight each other, like, Mortal Kombat style. It was just... it was so weird. You know, our robots look like, you know, tin cans, but Japan can make some serious, like, you know, looks like regular people, you know, ninja bots.
Yeah, that to me was always a little bit weird. I mean, I love a good ninja flick, but this...
yeah.
It was, like, poorly executed.
We only had $22 million. We spent all our money on RoboCop's effects and the jetpack, so we don't have money to build another robot. Let's just say these ninjas are robots.
Yes.
We can build a fake head when it gets chopped off, but we can't build a whole robot.
But they had sweet katanas.
Oh, yeah, this one was just... It was so, it was, like I said, it was fun to watch, but it was nothing compared to, like, RoboCop 1.
Yeah, and, I mean, it you could definitely, and I mean, you know, the fact that it bombed the way that it did, you know.
I mean, I remember watching the Robo, like, and as we mentioned earlier, it, you know, generated a lot of spinoffs and stuff later on. There was the TV show, the made-for-TV movies, which... Some of them were actually decent. It just didn't have the... I mean, if Peter Weller's not in the suit, it's just not as cool. And, you know, they were all, like I said, made for TV movies, so there weren't a lot of the blood and action that you get from the movies, so they were a little bit weaker in that regard. And then they had the cartoon series, too, which was actually pretty good. I think I even had some old RoboCop toys from when they started making... But, you know, that movie was so bloody. Him and, like, you know... animated form is just kind of weird.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, the first two were definitely the strong suit, and I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, the brotherhood of police or anybody in, you know, that is, you know, serving or anything else. I mean, I that was always kind of the strong suits, and you know, I'm
yes, because to the OCP, he was an asset. He was just a machine. But to all the officers he worked with, no, they had no problem believing that's Officer Alex Murphy. You know, they did not consider him a tool. You know, he was a, you know, a freaking, you know, a man just like any other.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, one scene that we didn't talk about in the first one is when, you know, you know, Murphy, you know, is still in the robotic form and, you know, and, you know, basically approaches him and, you know, says, hey, Murphy, you back or something like that. And, you know, gets the third degree on, you know, what did you say to him and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, like she was going to be reprimanded for, you know,
because it was like right when he was starting to have those, you know, memory flashbacks and he's storming out and they're, he's storming out of there and they're kind of chasing him and she's like, you know, how you doing? And he's like, can I help you with something, officer? She's like, what's your name? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. And she's like, you know, your name. You know, I'm, you know, you don't remember me? And then she's like, Murphy, is that you? And then she's like, what? I just asked him his name. And like, yeah, that was kind of cool. And they're like, he doesn't have a name. He's a freaking machine. And they're like, nope, there's still a man in there somewhere. Which is kind of weird when, you know, the remake they did a few years ago, I think it was 2014, they changed his, it was like, Murphy died in the first movie. I mean, he was dead, and they brought him back as RoboCop. But in that movie, he didn't die. He was alive through the whole thing. He was like blown all to shit, but he was still alive. And they're like, "Hey, we can rebuild you." It was almost like a bionic man instead of, you know, the $6 million man instead of like RoboCop. So yeah, that kind of made some, because, you know, they never was like, you know, them telling his wife that he was dead. You know, his wife was there through the whole movie and knew he was alive. He was just, you know, turned into Darth Vader. So that was kind of made,
I am your father.
An interesting change to the story where, you know, they brought that, you know, dealing with his wife after he's had this catastrophic injury, and now he's got all these, you know, it's almost a, someone coming back from war and all of a sudden having a whole bunch of prosthetics. It was kind of interesting seeing that dynamic, but, and then there's the whole thing about drones and whatnot.
I mean, it had to be...
As a standalone movie, the new RoboCop was kind of fun to watch if you don't compare it to the original.
Yeah.
I still think the original was a much better movie, but I didn't hate the new RoboCop. I did like the whole, like, they kind of, like, when they first introduce him, he's wearing, like, the metallic-looking suit and almost looks similar to the original RoboCop design. They're like, I don't know about the color. They're like, well, we can also do it in black. You know, make it more tactical. Yeah, yeah, let's do it black. Tactical's cool, you know?
And that's, that's very fitting for the time.
Yeah.
It's black, it must be tactical.
Yeah, with, you know, the original movies dealing with, you know, corporate greed of the 80s, this one kind of, the newer one kind of deals more with the government surveillance and drones and, you know, the, you know, whatever, corporate industrial military complex concerns and stuff of today's time. Like, all these movies have had a very... you know, underlying political theme to them of, you know, the problems of that era. And like I said, the new one is not unwatchable. I mean, like I said, if you don't go in judging it on its predecessors, it's not a bad movie.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair.
So as we kind of wrap up, any final thoughts here on the Rebel?
Yeah. You know, either my taste buds are, you know, shot or something, but it seems to kind of meld out. Like, it took on much more of a complex, like, earthy, you know, flavor. The spice sort of subdued. Like I said, it could just be my taste buds and
so
stuff.
So strong at the start that it kind of numbs you toward the end.
But, you know, I got to say that this is, you know, probably my second or third of the, you know, rebellious here that I've had. And it is consistent. And, you know, it's complex. And I didn't get bored of it.
I mean, it's a $12 smoke, so it's in that, starting to bump up a little in that price range, but it's still not an outrageously priced smoke.
No.
I mean, it's good for what it is. It's definitely a nice premium cigar. Yeah, and it's one I would definitely go back to, given the choice.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, this is, you know, anytime I pick up, you know, anytime I smoke a cigar, I always, you know, try to make sure that I smoke two or three, because, you know, sometimes you don't really get, you know, just a one and done. You don't really get anything to compare it to, because, you know, there's lesser, you know, cigar manufacturers out there that I'll smoke one, it'll be great. I'll smoke another, the same exact thing, and, you know,
yeah,
I won't enjoy
it. Consistency.
You know, with this here, it's been consistent, and, you know, I mean, I think that's absolute key when you're talking about premium cigars, especially, you know, once you start getting above that $10 price range is kind of what, you know, I look for personally. You know, if I'm paying more than that, then I expect a, you know, good, consistent product so that if I do get a box or whatever, I know what I'm getting.
Yeah, you're going to be able to smoke that entire box. It's like the, we talked about the Swamp thing and the Swamp Rat. I liked them when they first come out, but then after smoking those, a few at a time. It's like the just that grassy Candela favor just starts to get, you know, not good after a while, where it's like, you know, I like going back to it and the Filthy Hooligan occasionally, but it's not one that can go into my regular rotation, because it's not a flavor I like experiencing all the time. But this one I could definitely, you know, go back to, it's like I said, it's been a great cigar. And
yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, for me, a premium cigar is one, it's about the taste and the flavor, but the other thing is the quality control. And there's been some, you know, sticks recently that, you know, going back a year ago, I absolutely loved. And, you know, now I go and I try to smoke them and I find four or five, you know, that are plugged. The quality control has gone downhill. And,
yeah,
you know,
and tobacco crops change from year to year. So if you don't kind of retweak the blend to reproduce the flavor of the previous edition, you know, this year's version of a cigar may taste different than next year's version of that same cigar. You know, some people just like, oh, you know, stick with this exact formula and we're not going to change anything, but the tobacco itself has changed and you're not getting the same flavor.
I mean, that's to be expected, but, you know, like I said, you know, for me, it's about if I'm paying, you know, $10 plus, then every cigar should reflect that. And, you know, and much more than just taste and flavor. You know, that's where, you know, we start looking at the construction and that type of thing. And, you know, I've got to say that every, you know, of the Rebellious cigars I've had have, you know, had a, you know, great construction and everything. So,
yeah, I don't think I've had a bad, you know, of any of the EP Carrillo line. The Inch is a good one, but it's one of those that it's the size of it. It's not in my regular rotation because it's just one of those you got to have time to smoke because it's such a big ass cigar. But yeah, this one definitely, like I said, it's comes that, yeah, I think 5 all the way up to 7, all in that 54 to 56 ring gauge. So it's very traditional size.
Yeah, and
cigar.
I'm finding myself, you know, really starting to. I was on the whole, you know, oh, I want the 6x60 and everything, and now I'm finding myself. I like a 54 ring gauge.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you get into those bigger ring gauges, you get so much more of the you know, unbalanced, because, like, there's so much filler tobacco to fill those 60 ring gauges. When you go back to, like, the 50s and 4s, you're getting a lot more complex, more balanced smoke a lot of the times. And with that, well, do you have any RoboCop highlights or favorite moments?
Seeing a man fall out of a window. That was great. I mean, just that whole line of Dick, you're fired. Thank you, and you know, done.
Yeah, the empty a clip and forcing a guy out a window is epic in any movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it was good when dude got shot out Nakatomi Tower window. It's good in RoboCop.
Absolutely.
And with that, we'll be right back.
We get the best of both worlds. The fastest reflexes modern technology has to offer, onboard computer-assisted memory, and a lifetime of on-the-street law enforcement programming. It is my great pleasure to present to you RoboCop.
This guy is really good.
He's not a guy, he's a machine.
All Detroit has a cancer. Cancer is crime.
Let the woman go. You are under arrest.
You better back up, pal.
Your move, creep.
What are your prime directives?
You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to an attorney.
What is this shit?
Anything you say may be used against you.
A cyborg, you idiot. You recorded every word you said.
You're dead. We killed you.
His memory's admissible as evidence.
You're gonna have to kill it.
Get in the car, for God's sake!
RoboCop, the future of law enforcement.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's time for Beer 30. So, what are we drinking on this week, Brad?
So this week we're drinking a beer called Castile Triple. This is from Castle Brewery out of Van Hassenbach, Belgium.
Actually, I think the Van Hassenbach is the guy's name.
Oh, yeah, true. It's
Xavier Van
Ingol Mostrat 46, you know, butchering.
Yeah, it's somewhere in Belgium.
West Flanders. How about that?
There you go. Yeah, this is a, you know, we've had Belgian triples before, but this one is kind of unique because it's probably the highest ABV, you know, out of a Belgian triple that don't tend to have high alcohol content, but this one comes in at 9% ABV.
Actually,
11%. I'm looking at the 9 degrees Celsius preferred serving temperature, but yeah, 11% ABV.
And in, you know, typical Belgium fashion, this is brewed using malt, maize sugar, Belgian hops, yeast, and water. You know, right off the bat, one of the things that, you know, attracted me to the beer is just the absolute aroma. And even though it comes in at 11%, it's actually got a mild taste to it. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't
taste
drink
like
as
a barley wine or anything like that. And it's a blonde, so it has that definitely that lighter, fruitier Belgian taste you normally get with a triple.
Yeah, and in fact, this beer was actually, you know, the beer was called Castile Blonde, but the brewery chose a new blonde variety with a lower alcohol content by volume, so they then basically redubbed this as, you know, the Castile Triple. So, you know, in a sense, they rebaptized it.
And it looks like they changed the formula a little bit to include higher proportions of aroma hops. So, give it that, like, that floral notes and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. You know, floral, you know, citrusy, just all around good. I mean, you know, and, you know, as far as, you know, the beer color itself, I mean, this just pours a beautiful golden brown. You know, I mean, it's, you know, a little bit, you know, cloudy, but I mean, it's definitely, definitely, you know, amazing. And, you know, it's actually got a nice frothy head to it.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the most beer-looking beer I think we've had. I mean, the mug with the nice, you know, golden color and the frothy head on top, this is like the stereotypical picture of a beer from any, like, you know beer advertisement.
Yeah. Absolutely. And
I mean, the Belgians know what they're doing when they're making beer.
You know, it being a triple, you know, recommended serving temps about 48.2, you know, and if you can, you know, get it, you know, basically the recommended glassware is more of your, you know, Belgium style, almost looks like a tulip, you know, a little bit wider base, you know, and slims toward the top of the glass. I really dig the actual Castile glassware, and I may have to try to see if I can't order that. Be great to add to my collection.
So what are we going to rank this on the Untappd scale?
I'm at a solid 5 all day, every day.
Yeah, this is definitely a good drinking beer. I mean, at 11%, you may get yourself in trouble if you try to pound this like your normal, like, summer day barbecue beer.
Yeah.
A couple
and
of these
you know
you might
what?
Be a little bit on the tipsy side, but, I mean, it is definitely a nice, smooth drinking
beer. You know, and this beer, you know, like we said earlier, at 11% ABV, it drinks very smooth.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I would think we were drinking like a regular 5% beer, not something at, you know, over double that.
Absolutely,
because you don't really get that alcohol aftertaste that you get with a lot of the higher volume or higher ABV beers.
Yeah, and in fact, their other beer that they're really known for is the Castile Donker. I would be very curious to, you know, try that as well. So
a little bit darker variety.
Yep. So, you know, if you're in the coming Dawsonville, North Georgia area, you know, once again, I picked this bottle specifically up at Dawson Fine Wine, but, you know, the availability should be pretty good and should be relatively easy to find. So not something so exclusive that you're going to need to fly out to West Flanders for. However,
unless you just really want to go to Belgium, yes. I hear it's pretty there. So, yeah, do with it what you will. And with that, drink another, and we'll be right back.
Yes, science.
And welcome back. It's time for science. You ready to learn some stuff, Brad?
What do you got for me this week?
Well, let's go talk about volcanoes and the stuff that happens in volcanoes.
Lava spews everywhere. Sometimes.
Have you heard of Mount Vesuvius and the destruction of Pompeii from 79 AD?
Yes.
Probably one of the most famous, you know, volcano disasters where an entire city was wiped out. But since then, it's like we've all seen images on, you know, of it where they, you know, basically most of the city was intact, but all the people were kind of killed in like just the explosion of hot gas and ash just kind of instantly killed people and preserved them, you know, as whatever they were doing at the time they've died. And we've seen images of what looks like, you know, families huddled together or, you know, men embracing each other that, you know, as the, you know, as everyone knew the end was coming and holding on, even like food and stuff was preserved in like, you know, fossilized ash on the tables. Well, recently there's been a photo going around the news that appears that one guy died while doing what he loved. It looks to be in the middle of a good spank session when he was taken out by the volcano.
Very polite way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, most people have like said that, yeah, this dude looks like he's, you know, died while cranking it. And others have been more generous to the image, like, well, maybe he was just trying to protect the ones he loved when he died. Or even to the one where, like, you know, maybe the guy's balls were on fire and he was trying to put them out. But yeah, from the image, and yeah, we'll have a link in the show notes. It definitely, yeah, looks like he was taking care of business when the volcano hit. And some scientists say, and a lot of people that were closer to the, you know, some of the, you know, images we've seen of people that are, you know, either look like they were in pain or they were huddled together. But the people that were closer to the explosion were not killed by the ash, but more of a hot gas wave that fried them instantly.
So
before
you probably
they had,
didn't even have time to respond or react.
Yes, those people, like you said, you couldn't see the hot wave of gas coming, and it pretty much killed everyone instantly without any kind of, you know, time to react. So the question is, did this man see, like, oh, crap, the end is coming, let me rub one out real quick, or was he already engaged in that activity and then just died instantly and became a Twitter and Reddit joke to us thousands of years later?
You know, I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, you know, where was the was he in a house? Was he in the middle of, you know,
there's walls behind him, so I assume it looks like he might have been in a house. If not, he was just, you know, yeah, sees the volcano blow up and starts, you know, going for it in the middle of the street. But yeah, I mean, if he died instantly as they theorized, like I said, he could have had no idea that, you know, what was going on outside when the volcano came. Yeah, no pun intended.
I don't know. Yeah, fuck. I mean, I would almost view it as, well, you know, Pompeii's not going to be the only thing erupting.
Oh, God. I mean, there's got to be worse ways to die. At least he went down, you know, with a smile on his face, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. Just, I don't really know how to touch this topic.
Oh.
Hashtag Pompeii puns.
Oh, God.
And we just lost every subscriber that we've had.
All three of them. Well, speaking of RoboCop and you know, things of the future, the U.S. House Armed Services Committee just voted 60-1 to approve a new branch of the military called the U.S. Space Corps.
So, my thoughts are, that's not a party line, you know, vote.
60-1.
So, does the government know that something is already out there?
Yeah, because that kind of sounds like the thing that they're like, oh, no, this is because, like, you know, as we're kind of moving into space, we need some kind of security in there. Or if they're just, and they even said in the mandate that they're like, this branch is going to be in charge of training soldiers to fight in space. Is there a, like, Independence Day situation coming that we don't know about that they're like, we got to start preparing for this? I'm not going to say aliens, but probably aliens.
I don't know. I mean, you know, if we start hearing government officials echoing Ellie, you know, and a life event, then, yeah, you know, might be something to, maybe then I'll take off my tinfoil cap.
I mean, with a name by the U.S. Space Corps, I mean, it sounds like the Space Marines. I mean, anybody who's played, you know, Doom. Warhammer 40K, Doom, or even, like, you know, when we talked about our James Bond episode, the Space Marines that went up to take out the Moonraker base. I mean, it's been something in popular sci-fi for forever. So it's kind of cool that, you know, I mean, if I wasn't old and fat, like, at this point, I'd be like, oh, we get to be, like, there's going to be space. Sign me up now.
But then again, I mean, yes, you can train.
Do you want X-Wings? Yes, I do. This is how we get X-Wings.
So, you know, my next question is, all right, you can train a soldier to fight in space. How do we know that any conventional weapon we have right now will be, you know, worth, you know, if there is a, you know, another life form out there, maybe with far superior knowledge or something? How do we know our weapons are going to be effective?
And then again, this may, you know, lead to the development of the next gen sci-fi weaponry. I mean,
so we get a Death Star.
Like, if you ever seen the show Space Above and Beyond, that was like not a too far futuristic version of, or something like Starship Troopers, where eventually we have a space-based navy type thing with, you know, combat starships that are, you know, even if you go the Star Trek era, you know, the, you know, United Federation of Planets and, you know, Starfleet, you know, yes, they could, you know, fight and do war stuff, but then they were, their primary objective was, you know, kind of exploration and whatnot. I mean, it's kind of an interesting, and they say this new branch will fall under the Air Force, kind of like the Marines are under the Department of Navy. So, I mean, and the Air Force has pretty much, you know, been at the forefront of all our space stuff as it is, you know, until, like, we started getting into SpaceX and the civilian, but, you know, NASA was, you know, part of the Air Force pretty much, and a lot of our astronauts, that's where they started, was, you know, test pilots and, you know, former, you know, Air Force pilots that went into the space program. So it's not a huge leap to put this new branch of military underneath, you know, the Air Force. Yeah.
No, but, you know, then again, you know, just playing devil's advocate is, you know, humans by nature, we consume. So, you know, what if we're a virus that, you know, now, you know, we're outside of our, you know, controlled environment, so, you know, any other intelligent life now sees, you know, the need to eradicate said virus. Or, and we bring Independence Day upon ourselves.
Or if this is not a, oh crap, the government realizes aliens are coming and we need to start preparing, the other side of that coin is, oh, the government realizes, like, we only got, like, another 50 years left before we've destroyed our planet. We need to start preparing to move and colonize if we want to continue the human race.
A, I mean, I did see, you know, an article that in 2030 we're destined for another, you know, mini ice age. Then again, 2015 was supposed to be the end of the world, as well as 2000, as well as, you know, anybody else has ever heard a Nostradamus prediction. So
yeah.
Fuck knows?
Yeah, but it's kind of cool seeing us, you know, because they've kind of, NASA kind of has not really gone away, but the shuttle program has ended, and the actual exploration and business of space has kind of moved into the private sector. It's kind of cool that this may be the next, business of the government in space. Now that they've let the exploration and the science kind of move to the private sector.
Do we really want government in space? I mean,
I just want X-Wings. That's all I want.
You know, we'll get into, this in nerd news a little bit, but I think it's interesting that, Disney is, working on, developing, the whole Star Wars land where every person's going to have their storyline. So if we got space marines, what better place to hide a whole bunch of space weaponry than Disneyland with a whole bunch of space shit?
If anybody could develop a fleet, it's like one day, the aliens are going to show up and, Disney World is just going to, it's just going to move out and these giant spaceships are just going to launch from from the park. It's we've been hiding a secret space fleet.
What better place to hide than Florida. In plain sight?
Oh, and then there's also the, eventual space fleet or whatnot. But I just watched that movie Passengers. The whole, us leaving Earth and going to, another land. So it may, it's going to take, the first people getting there is going to have to be some dudes that are willing to not come back if that's what it takes. Because, like I said, it takes so long to get somewhere else with our current, technology. And even, I believe it's China announced that they're starting a project where they're going to have people. They're building an underwater. It's basically going to be a test for a future space base. They've built this underwater facility that they're going to have people live in for 2 years to see if. How someone living off planet in a potential, Mars or whatnot habitat, if you can survive living in something like that for, multiple years without going batshit crazy. So, I mean, it's like, we're not the only ones who are thinking about, eventually moving off this planet. So it's kind of interesting. It's a cool time for science. And speaking of space, a company called Moon Express, which kind of reminds me of the Planetary Express from Futurama, is planning on building a moon outpost within the next 3 years. They say by 2020, they plan to create a lunar outpost. I mean, it's going to be manned by robots. Their first ship they're planning to launch is the MX-1 Scout. And eventually, so they're going to follow up with the MX-2, the MX-5, the MX-9. And basically, these things are going to be able to clip together like Voltron and form this, robotic base on the moon. And their plans is they're wanting to kind of use the moon as a jumping off point for future space exploration. So it's not only that, but also mining. There's a lot of heavy metals and stuff in space and on the moon that are too expensive and too heavy to move there, but if we can mine it there and build stuff in space, it's a whole lot cheaper than trying to build something on Earth and move it to space. So speaking of our eventual move to the stars, it's kind of cool to see not only that the...
So it's going
to
be like real-life Mass Effect. We're just going to hop from planet to planet and mine the resources and... All right, sweet.
And, of course, it's not nerd news without... some story of robots.
Wait, I do news.
I mean,
you do science.
Science.
Damn, get it right. You're supposed to be educating
me. In robot
me.
News in science, there's now a robot lawyer offering free legal advice for 1,000 areas of law.
Until somebody wipes his program.
Yes, the robot lawyer who is called Do Not Pay. Was originally created by a 18-year-old British entrepreneur named Joshua Broden using IBM's Watson AI program, and basically he started it to get people out of parking tickets. It was originally designed to give people free advice on how they can fight parking and speeding tickets and whatnot.
How about don't illegally park and not speed?
Yeah, but people don't listen to that, so. And supposedly, so far, it has helped 16,000 people successfully dispute their tickets, which equates to about $4 million worth of fines that it's end up getting people out of. But he has expanded it to consumer law disputes between, like, you know, landlords and whatnot. I mean, it's not in the criminal defense business yet, but, you know, as the program keeps evolving and expanding, it's, you know, bringing in more and more elements of law. And at core, it's basically a, you know, chatbot. Anyone who's ever messed with them online, it's, you know, a chatbot that knows the laws and knows how to respond to your legal questions and give you the free advice if you are like me and too cheap to afford a lawyer.
If you cannot afford an attorney, this robot will be appointed to you.
Yes, and it's even been helping with like immigration law, telling people how to fill out, you know, different immigration paperwork and whatnot. So, I mean, it's not, like I said, not doing criminal law yet, so, you know, don't commit any crimes yet, but if you need to know how to sue your landlord or whatnot, check out Do Not Pay. He may help you out if he's not actually Skynet. And with that, we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Rick and Sherry from the Life in a Kilt podcast.
If you are a kilt wearer, a kilt lover, or simply like to gawk, come hang out with us every week on Life in a Kilt podcast.
We discuss kilt life, regular life, and everything in between and underneath.
We've got humor, interviews, sketch comedy, pop culture, beer reviews, even indie music. And we discuss it each week in a way that only we can.
Well, only the way I can.
Oh, hush. I discuss it so much better than
whatever.
You.
Whatever. Anyway, discover the joys of kilt life without ever leaving the comfort of your own headphones. Kilts aren't required, but if you've got one, feel free to buckle up.
That's the Life in a Kilt podcast with Rick and Sherry every week on the ESO Network.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So we already, you know, hinted and talked a little bit back in the science segment when you wanted to talk about your, you know, space military and stuff that Disney has finally given us the glimpse of Star Wars lands, which is currently being built in California and Florida. So apparently they had a 50-foot 3D model, and this is set to cover 14 acres. It's due to open in 2019 at Disneyland in Anaheim and Disney Hollywood Studios at Disney World in Orlando. You know, one of the things that I thought was really cool is, one, not only the actual Star Wars look and feel, but they've announced that every guest is going to get their own unique storyline.
Interesting. So, I mean, it's going to be like, you know, cosplay day at the, it's going to be interesting how they're going to pull that off with the amount of people that will probably be coming through there at a time. I mean, you've seen those, like, the Jedi school thing they do now for kids and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm wondering how that's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, 100% certain on all the details right now. You know, the two main attractions are one that'll let guests captain the Millennium Falcon on a secret mission. And, you know, the other ones will basically be a climatic battle between the First Order and the Resistance. You know,
I'm down to shoot some stormtroopers. It's all good.
Yeah. I mean, it just looks absolutely, you know, awesome. You know, chairman of Disney World Park basically said this is the most ambitious land we've built to date. You know, obviously with the huge Star Wars following and everything else, you know, they're, you know,
they got to make back that, you know, $1 billion they gave Lucas.
Well,
suck every cent out of this they can get.
I mean, you know, but with such a hardcore following,
the attention to detail
is going to be absolutely, you know,
yeah, I've
insane.
Not been to Disney World since I was a kid. This would definitely, like, yeah, bring me back to the park. I mean, that's something I don't even want to bring kids. I'm like, I would go do this on my own if
I
have to.
Well, I mean, you know, in fact, we've talked about, you know, previously on the podcast about doing the adult trip to Epcot and beers around the world and that type of stuff. But, you know, I mean, they've got the Avatar theme land in, you know, Orlando based on, you know, Pandora, the planet. And, I mean, that alone I would love to
experience. I've heard
that. That's
amazing. They didn't give us any kind of exact opening date. They said sometime in, you know, 2019, yep. But it would not surprise me if it did not, you know, be coincided with, you know, May the 4th and the, you know, Star Wars weekend at Disney around in that time. I mean,
God, that's already insane. Could you imagine, yeah. Like, now we've got this unveiling, like...
Yeah, I would not, if not that, then, you know, whatever next movie's scheduled to come out that year, it would probably be similarly timed.
Absolutely. Well, you know, speaking of, you know, Star Wars and a movie, we have got, you know, some behind the scenes, you know, reels of, you know, The Last Jedi. And although they didn't really give us any detail as to the movie, like, man, you know.
Which they've done a good job of that with
the, I mean, they've the kept their stuff. Lips it's so like, tight that, you know.
I mean, even like The Force Awakens, we didn't really know a whole lot about that until we sat down in the theater. So, yeah, I mean, we're three, 4 months out now, and
yes.
It's, yeah, we still know nothing, which, you know, we're starting to get used to that feeling.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
It's a whole lot better than the trailers giving away the entire movie, like, you know, some other movies.
Well, I mean, they kind of did this, too, with, you know, The Force Awakens, as well as Rogue One, you know, so... You know, I mean, I think this is kind of becoming the new creative norm, you know, for the Star Wars franchise. So, I mean, we got to see, you know, Mark Hamill, Daisy Ridley, and Oscar Isaac all make appearances in the clip and stuff. I don't know. I mean, you know, this is set, you know, to come out on December 15th. I mean, I know where I'll be on December 15th.
Yeah. December 15th, probably also December 16th. And then again on the 17th.
So, more to come as we, you know, learn more. But
yeah, I just hope we get, like, epic space battles in this. Because we did not get, like, a real good space battle. There was no, you didn't see any big capital ships in the last movie. And also, we didn't get to see Jedi's doing Jedi shit. We just got to see a wannabe Jedi and a piss-poor Sith fight each other. And Luke just kind of showed up and stared creepily at the end.
Yeah.
I want to see, you know, freaking Grandmaster Skywalker fucking soon. If they end up pulling a Han Solo on him, I'm going to be so pissed. I'm gonna, like, I'll be done with, like, the saga movies.
Yeah, you
movies.
Say the, you know, December 15th, 16th, and 17th, and you'll walk out in the middle of December 15th, and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah,
and
we Luke dies, I'm out. Fuck the shit. He better not pull a Yoda. Which would be like, you know, I've said Force Awakens was basically just a recreation of A New Hope. If they pull like a fucking Yoda with Luke with it, or a Ben, well, Han Solo was the Ben Kenobi of that movie. If by the third movie they'll probably pull a Yoda where like fucking she leaves to go fight somebody and then comes back and he falls asleep on his couch and dies. I mean, it's...
Watch out, we'll get the seagulls will poke you on the coconut.
Yeah. Freaking video's insane.
If nothing else, then we'll make a you know, bad lip sync, you know, video or something. Who knows?
Oh god, I like monkeys. Yeah. You're a monkey.
So we're gonna move away from Star Wars and into something completely different. So we got a trailer for, you know, an Amazon Prime Video exclusive little film called The Tick, and. Haven't seen much talks of The Tick or anything since, you know, Saturday morning cartoons were actually worth waking up for. And I gotta say, I'm actually excited. It looks quirky. It looks what I remember from the animated series and stuff, so...
Yeah, the old animated series was insane. And this, like, I mean, it looks so much like that. Or at least the feeling of the animated series.
A little bit more in shape than what he was in the animated series.
Yeah. It looks amazing. I mean... I'm going to have to figure out how to use Amazon Prime just so I can watch this.
Well, you go to Amazon.com and you sign in, and there's a thing called Prime Video. Click there, my friend, if you are a Prime subscriber. You also get free 2-day shipping on Prime items.
Woohoo!
Yeah, and I think Amazon.com is actually a proud sponsor of the ESO Network, which we are part of, which you hear before every episode.
Yeah, so go to the ESO podcast Amazon link and go buy some stuff.
It doesn't cost you anything and it helps support great programming.
We're corporate sellouts.
Hey, you know what? It's not often that we plug ourselves. So, anyway, extremely excited.
A man of volcano.
Jesus. I thought we were done with that.
So what's next on the...
Well...
It's called a callback.
Yes. Next is a little film that we've talked about based on a little book that we read, you know, a couple of years ago. Anyway, we got our first actual look at Ready Player One.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some, like, set leaked photos which just basically showed, like, the environment, but nothing of our main characters or anything actually recognizable from the book. But this time we're getting a photo of our main character in his secret van hideout from the book, and it looks exactly what you would imagine it from reading the description.
It goes into as much detail as it's actually got the bicycle, you know, in the back that he uses to power the Oculus and stuff. So, I mean...
Yeah, he has like a little bicycle generator that he uses to charge his batteries for his stuff, and yet he's wearing his rig, and yeah, it's so amazing.
And I'm sure, like, this is probably like one of those images where it's like, stare at this for 30 minutes and all of a sudden you will see millions of things that you did not originally see when you first looked at the picture for 30 minutes.
Oh yeah, people have definitely been like just analyzing the shit out of this photo and trying to find all the little secrets in it.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was a, you know, a little bit higher quality, but I mean, you know, once again, I mean, the ingeniousness of, you know, the promos and, you know, the, yeah, we're going to give you a little bit of taste. I'm with you, you know, I'm tired of these trailers that give away the entire story arc that make you feel like, well, why do I even want to see the movie now? I already know the outcome. Oh, look at there, you showed the final, you know, ending. So I've seen the start, the middle, I can fill in the bits and pieces. What's the point? But, you know, with this here, I mean, a lot is left to the imagination. And, you know, once again, if you folks have forgotten or whatever, Ready Player One is scheduled to release on March 2018. It'll be a great birthday present for myself.
That's so far away.
Yeah, but in the meantime, we got a lot of great stuff coming up. So as we continue on with news and films in general, you'll be happy to know that Daniel Craig is coming back for James Bond 25.
Interesting, because yes. Yeah, at one point he said, I'd rather be shot in the head than play James Bond again, but I was talking to somebody
Money
who
had, talks.
Yeah, that and probably someone who had just finished a hectic filming schedule and is exhausted now that he's had time to think about it and be like, oh yeah, this is a lot of money. And he's only done 3 movies so far. I mean, you know, freaking how, you know, we talked about Roger Moore and his, like, what, 6 films? And
yes.
You know, 6 or 7 that Sean Connery did. And you know, you don't want to be, like, you know, the guy from Her Majesty's Secret Service that was a one and done, or Timothy Dalton with his 2. I mean, come on, you gotta give it time to become legend.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I like Daniel Craig's Bond. You know, so I'm glad to see him back. You know, I think just after a few films, you know, like you said, stick it out for the duration. You're an iconic character. Own that role.
Yeah, Inspector was such a good movie. I'd like to see this brand of Bond continue for a little bit longer. That's been one of the things, like, we know, even though Daniel Craig had said he's not coming back, that Bond is obviously coming back. So there's always been a little debate about who's coming next. So now we don't have to debate about that anymore. We got Daniel Craig for at least one more.
Absolutely. So we're going to switch gears a little bit, you know, flip it over to the Marvel Universe here. And, you know, basically Lucy Liu is set to direct, you know, Marvel's Luke Cage season premiere. So kind of interesting to see her step into that role. And, you know, I mean, absolutely, you know, I've loved, you know, her character and stuff like that. So we'll see what, you know, has to come of the premiere. I mean, I think that's a pretty big, you know, role. I mean, that's going to set the stage, the foundation, and everything else for the remainder of Luke Cage's season. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that, because it, because the Defenders is coming up before this, so this will be, you know, one of the first post-Defenders series, and Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they continue his story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's done some stuff, you know, some short films, you know, back in 2011 and stuff that she directed. So, you know, I'm curious. I'm holding out hope. You know, I really enjoyed the Luke Cage, you know, season that we had. So, going to see what the premiere is like. And, you know, I mean, you know, it's been said that, you know, basically, you know, Lou has a, you know, keen eye, superb sense of story, and an obvious love of actors. So, you know, we'll just have to see what happens in Luke Cage 2.
I mean, she's done, as an actress, done some, you know, pretty good action stuff. So, kind of cool, you know, how she sees how she directs action and brings her knowledge of the game to the table.
Absolutely. And next, apparently Squirrel Girl has been casted.
Oh, yes.
So we've got Melina. I'm going to butcher her last name.
Venthrub.
There you go.
Lana Venthrub. Believe me, I've internet stalked her for a while. Anyone who does know who that is, she's the hot AT&T girl from all the AT&T cell phone commercials.
Yes, so, you know, I'm just kind of excited to see Marvel, you know, and some of the lesser-known characters, you know, that really haven't got a whole lot of screen time or, you know, a whole lot of recognition start, you know, shining through and, you know, becoming their own.
Yeah, and this, they brought Squirrel Girl into Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. It's going to be interesting to see how they do that as a live action character. But then again, when they first announced Guardians of the Galaxy, like, how the fuck are they going to have a talking raccoon as a main character?
And they absolutely pulled that off. Yes.
So this is going to be interesting.
Absolutely. So next, we're going to switch gears, just talk a little bit about the DCU. And spoiler alert for anybody that hasn't seen the last season of Arrow.
Everyone dies.
Except maybe the new Black Canary, because we're now apparently getting our first glimpse of the new Black Canary.
Yeah, they brought in a character who basically had Black Canary's powers after the original Black Canary was killed last season, but she's not really taken up the mantle of Black Canary just yet. And, you know, this last season ended with a cliffhanger where there was a huge explosion and you don't know who survived except for obvious Arrow, because he wasn't in the explosion. But apparently we know at least one person survived, and it's, you know, the new Black Canary. So yeah, we've got our first images of her in the actual Black Canary suit, and she looks pretty comic booky hero-y.
Yes.
Thinks it's probably going to be pretty awesome.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, the new season premiere will be Thursday, October 12th at 9 p.m., so, you know, be sure to check it out there, and, you know, we will bring reports and updates as we learn them ourselves. Any other news that I forgot to mention? I feel like I forgot something. Oh, you know what? We did get an image of the Stranger Things 2, you know, season, and the image looks very supernatural. It looks very dark. It looks all things awesome.
Yes, I can't wait for October to finally see the next rendition of Stranger Things. Because that was one of those that, like, I think I killed it in, like, 2 days.
Yes.
It, like, sucked you in so quick.
I was hooked, line, and sinkered, yes.
Yeah, and like, I've watched it. I had to show my girlfriend that, like, and we burned through it in another, like, 2 days. I mean, it's like, once you watch it, you can't stop watching it. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the boys returning and finding out what happened to Eleven and the rest of the crew, and seeing some weird alien shit.
Yes.
Or interdimensional being shit, because very Cthulhu-esque images coming out of there.
I think Lovecraft would be proud.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love craft beer.
And the kids in the Ghostbuster outfits, I mean, that's some pretty nice proton packs for some kids. Those kids would fit right in at Dragon Con.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So with that, we're going to wrap this up. Check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. You want to buy some shirts, there's links on our website to our Zazzle store, and go to RealMenSmokeCigars.com. They have the Cigar Nerds official smoking shirts on there as well. Pick you up some Strike Force Energy, StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code CigarNerds. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at CigarNerdPod. Send us a message, send us a comment. We answer all of them. And with that, I'll buy that for a dollar. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.